just of, in the interest of time, I think we should probably get started. Mort Downey said that he's going to be about 30 minutes late, which means he probably won't be here for another 20 or 25 minutes, and he apologizes. Alvin Nichols wants to be able to call in. He has to be in Baltimore this morning. So if Loida can work it up so that Alvin is on electronically, we can have the meeting. I'd call the meeting to order. I would ask for the approval of the agenda. Motion made and seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed. Approval of the minutes of July the 24th. Motion made and seconded to approve the minutes of July 24th. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed. Information items. Quarterly meeting with the Writers Advisory Council leadership. Good morning. How are you?
What we wanted to talk about is the things we have listed, but we also wanted to leave a little bit of time for open discussion. Also, Candace Walsh, who is our representative from D.C., might be joining us. She has the kind of job where it's hard for her to get away. The first item I wanted to cover were our work plan deliverables. As you know, we spent quite a bit of time in the first part of this calendar year trying to come up with things that were of interest to you, would be useful to riders, and, you know, that we could negotiate for work being done with the staff. And I just wanted to give you a little update on those and to highlight one specific accomplishment that we're quite proud of. In general, what we have done is we have made recommendations for revision of our bylaws, and those are wending their way through your Office of General Counsel, and we hope that you'll see them for approval at your October meeting. Secondly, we have sent to you previously a resolution on bus service in the D.C. area, and I have to thank Matt Brown, who is now, I understand, the director of DDOT, for helping us by providing Sam Zimbabwe to give us a very informative briefing. And on the basis of that, we decided that we would broaden our interest from the 16th Street bus corridor, which has gotten most of the press and coverage, to what we call the mid-city north-south corridors, which encompass Georgia Avenue, 14th Street, as well as 16th Street. The third thing we have done is to send you a position paper of comments on signage, and we really appreciate the opportunity to have an early look at the concepts behind the signage and to be able to make comments on it. We've actually had two presentations, one at a joint meeting with the AAC, and the second a full meeting of the RAC by Matthew McBride, and we really appreciate that. And I wanted to, even though I don't think it was part of our formal agenda, that we a work plan agenda, I really wanted to give Karen Lynch, our Maryland vice chair, the opportunity to report on something that we're really quite proud of, which is the recently Pell meeting between the Maryland board members and the most of the Maryland RAC members. So, Karen.
Great. Thank you, Carol. Good morning.
Good morning.
On September the 9th, the Maryland members of the RAC met with the Maryland members of the WMATA board, and we had a very open and frank discussion on issues that impact the riding public, specific to Maryland in most instances. We also discussed top challenges affecting WMATA, as well as their vision of the future of Metro, and among other issues, the Silver Line, signage, and I can go on and on. But I thought the meeting went extremely well. We're hoping to continue this dialogue at least at a minimum annually. And we also want to extend an invitation to the Maryland board members to participate or come to one of our RAC meetings in the near future.
I'm glad you're doing it.
Okay.
Okay. Good morning, Alvin.
I'm sorry, this is Carol Walker speaking, and we should have talked about.
Good morning. Sorry I cannot be there in person, but I appreciate the opportunity to be able to join it by phone. Thank you very much.
I'm sorry, because we just completed a briefing that Karen gave on the meeting that you all had between the Maryland RAC members and the Maryland board members, and
very appreciative
of that.
Great discussion. I was there at the meeting, so I won't ask you to repeat what was in the briefing.
Okay.
Thank you.
The next topic we had is the impact of the Silver Line on Blue Line riders, and I'd like for Barbara to talk a little bit about that, please, who is our Virginia vice chair.
Well, the meeting that we had of the RAC, the full RAC meeting that we had just a week roughly after the opening of the Silver Line, brought out one of the largest public constituencies I've seen in my 2+ years on the RAC, and mostly talking about what they'd experienced from the Blue Line as an impact of the Silver Line's opening. We weren't surprised that there were people that weren't happy with the change to the 12-minute headway. But they were, it was a very pretty civil discussion, to be frank. It was, and Lynn, I believe, was there. Lynn, over here, I've got the wrong shoulder here. Was there, were you there for the whole meeting? I know she was making a presentation that night on something, and so she was there to hear it as well. And so they brought some ideas up that they had and were hoping that they would be able to meet with someone on the staff to talk about it. And there is a meeting. Coincidentally, it's tonight in Alexandria, where Lynn and others will be meeting with the public, and our Virginia RAC and any RAC members are welcome. But it's just a dialogue. I think that she can do a far better job than we can to explain why it is what it is right now. And on the and Lynn even opened, you know, that she accepted, you know, they'd given a lot of hard thought about what the options were, but, you know, maybe there's always something else that could be discovered that they didn't think of. So we're hoping for a good discussion about that tonight.
I'm glad you had the opportunity, because I know it's an ongoing piece. I'd be anxious to hear what some of those options are, because I think, are we not still constantly looking for as best, other than the basic change of the behavior of folks making other choices, how do we get there before this major, major improvement that's needed there? So I think it's an important one to have a discussion with. And, you know, you just described, a really good tool, and that is for board members to participate and have some of that discussion with you. I know Mary and may have had some earlier when she was looking at the Roslyn end of it, but I'd be glad to continue the discussion there.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that discussion. I think that one of the things that, I know people weren't going to be happy about 12-minute gaps. I knew that they would anticipate they'd have trains that were fuller. What I did not make the simple connection was, is if there's a 12-minute gap and then the train is full, it's a 24-minute gap.
Right.
And some of them had experienced that. I don't know if they are still experiencing that. I have personally not seen those situations, but I'm not getting on in the same places that they are. So it'll be an interesting discussion, I'm sure. Thanks.
Well, it just reemphasizes when you're doing car allocation how we internally allocate cars to get to 8-car consist on the Blue Line when the headways are 12 minutes at rush. No other line has the possibility of almost half-hour gap at rush hour when one train is too full to accommodate other passengers. And one thing it seems that the authority should be doing is doing an analysis of allocation of enough cars to have enough 8-car trains at rush hour on the Blue Line to avoid that. It's just equity, it seems, and the ability, also it's the ability to maintain schedule on the Blue Line. I understand that hardly anybody likes to lose service in this process. It's bad enough doing that, but if this lesser level of service is not reliable or dependable at rush hour, it's a real embarrassment. So I think we have an obligation to those Blue Line riders to make sure that we've done everything we can about car allocation.
And I think, this is, as my mother would say, half-baked because we haven't thoroughly, you know, talked this out. But when we were talking at the RAC leadership team meeting, which we have, like, every Monday by teleconference after the monthly meeting, Karen brought up something that we really need to wrestle with, which is the focus appears to be on the Virginia people and their impact suffering. But as she pointed out, it really has an impact throughout. I hope you don't mind my bringing this up, you know, but it has an, I hadn't forgotten what you said, that it has an impact throughout the Blue Line, and the fact that it's often couched even by us. You know, we decided to go with this as a Virginia issue, and of course today's meeting is in a Virginia hotel. Makes it appear as if we think it's only that. And I mean, when I say we, I really mean we, because we've sort of framed it in Virginia terms too. But that was because the people who showed up at our meeting were mostly people who began or ended their trip in Virginia. But we are conscious of the fact that it really has an impact from, on both ends of the system. I don't know. Just the other thing is that we certainly would invite you all to come to any and all of our meetings. The RAC meetings are usually the first Wednesday of the month, and we're particularly extending an invitation for this meeting for you and your staffs. We're having a session on leadership and parliamentary procedure, and Loida has cashed in one of her.
I don't want to hear from us about parliamentary
procedure. Well, Sarah Merkel, who's an attorney and one of only 30 registered parliamentarians, she's credentialed in both the major parliamentary professional associations, and as I told her when we were sort of talking about it, I said everybody in Washington, D.C. thinks that we all know about parliamentary procedure, and there's absolutely nothing that we can learn from anybody. But she really makes it interesting. I think the board had offered us the opportunity to have a webinar with her, and if you recall, I thought the webinar was very interesting, and I'm hoping that the RAC members will not say, oh, parliamentary procedure, we don't need it. You know, I can use one of my three absences to, this is the one. But I think it's going to be interesting. She's put a lot of time in, and she's doing it gratis. So, frankly, if there's anybody on your staff, if there's anybody in DDOT, you know, please feel free to invite them for October 1st at 6:30. We'll follow up with a note on that. The only thing I wanted to say about the bus public hearings is so far, with the exception, unfortunately, of the first one where the three of us who were assigned to go all had last-minute conflicts, we have had some representation at the bus public hearings. And we've encouraged particularly the new members of the RAC to go because you really learn a lot about what the public is thinking. No matter what the subject is, they're going to talk about what they want, and it's usually broader than the bus lines that are being on the formal docket. So we really appreciate that. And the last formal topic is ridership data. And do you want to talk about that, or shall I?
I can, and then you can fill in what you'd like. It after the public speakers at our the August RAC meeting where we had several people talk about the Blue Line. One of the RAC members suggested, and I think passed a motion, that we request numbers to help us understand what the ridership is for the three lines that are competing for, especially Roslyn, for the tunnel. And knowing that it's far bigger than the Blue Line, there's the orange and the silver to consider, and not ridership, but all the factors that lead to this sense of, you know, the challenges that we see, how long between the trains, how full are they, that sort of thing. And we made that request And, you could probably take it from there because you've been more in the loop on that.
Yeah, I think that we're all anxious. The RAC, I guess there's maybe two issues. The RAC basically passed a motion that we wanted to see operating and service data on the Silver Line for the first 4 weeks. And arguably 4 weeks are not necessarily going to tell us a whole lot because July to August is a peculiar, sort of a shoulder period or a transition period. But we really would like to receive data on the Silver, on how the Silver Line opening in July has affected ridership, wait times, complaints, compliments, et cetera. And wanted to try to get a mechanism to do that on sort of a regular basis for maybe the next several months.
Lynn, you have.
If I may. So this morning we've put out a press release about Silver Line ridership, and we'd be glad to share that. Essentially, what we've been waiting for is to see the commutation pattern normalize after the Labor Day holiday period, because we know that in July and August we tend to see a drop-off based on vacation schedules, and when you get back to the normal ridership patterns in September, October, you get a better idea of what the ridership picture looks like. So this morning we have what I think is very good news, encouraging news about Silver Line ridership, and we provide as much detail in that release, which is now posted online, as possible, and we'll share that. With respect to Blue Line ridership, I'd like to have a full quarter of data since the Silver Line started to give you a better, more informed picture of what's going on. What I can tell you as a preliminary matter, looking back to the April-May timeframe, is that Blue Line ridership is tracking exactly the same way as the rest of the system. So whether it's blue, orange, silver, or red, we saw an uptick in ridership in April and May. Late June, we saw the usual drop-off that we see for vacation schedules and a bounce back in the earliest part of September. Again, we can share the data, but I'm not sure it's normalized, and I'm not sure it's indicative of trend yet. What we're not seeing in the preliminary information is the switch from blue to yellow that we hoped for towards the end of the line, which would be a good sign. Not seeing that, seeing people stay with that blue line train, even with the headway change. And the other thing we're not seeing is we're not seeing any diversion patterns. We're not seeing people leave the blue line to go to cars or bus, even though bus would be an acceptable alternative as far as Metro is concerned. So the patterns are unchanged. And what that says to me, again, as a very preliminary matter, that's why I really look forward to hearing from the customers this evening, is that people are staying with their traditional commutation patterns. They're waiting for that blue line train. And I'm looking at the, I'm having the passenger per car count pulled so that I can see what's going on there. Again, understanding that crowding happens in the belly of the train, not at the ends, all of those traditional patterns. But the next question for us is, are the trains full? Are they crowded? Is the 8-car train consist that we're running out there helping to relieve that? What are the conditions that the Blue Line's customers face? Because they're staying on the Blue Line. So I think we need a little bit more rich data before we share it and conclude anything from it, but we're happy to provide it. And, you know, if we need to do that on a quarterly basis, I think that would be helpful. But I'd like us to sort of figure out when that first quarter starts, just because we have some incomplete data sets at this point. But that's sort of sharing what we know today.
While the board's sensitive about the blue line changes around the silver line, what the board is struggling with fully understanding what's happening to rail ridership overall. The decline in rail ridership created a $45 million budget gap that had to be met by reductions in the existing year budget, and we have no real clue about whether or not this is a long-term or a cyclical change in rail ridership, and are looking forward to, when it's timely and the data is there, a presentation from the staff on best estimates about the various issues that have impacted rail ridership. And the anomaly is that I've never seen in any other system is that rail ridership is going down and bus ridership continues to go up. This would be the third year in a row that bus ridership has increased, and it will be the third year in a row that rail ridership has decreased. And I've never seen a disconnect like that about transit ridership. They both should be impacted by the same things: employment, joblessness, health of the economy, housing availability, all of those kinds of things that are part of our forecasting model should impact both bus and rail. For some reason, there's a shift. And frankly, I don't think we know as a board fully what's going on enough to be able to forecast this out a year or two and to be able to accommodate these trends. So it's a this is a very uncertain time about understanding what is happening overall with ridership within the system.
I'm sorry. What was the 45% statistic you gave? What was it over a period of time? What was...
You mean the...
Yeah, you said something about a 40... I think you said 45% decline.
No, no, no. Oh. I did... Did I say 45%?
That's what I thought I heard. That's why I was asking.
$45 million of budget impact for rail revenue, rail ridership revenue, not meeting the forecasted levels for this year.
Okay, and I thought you had a percentage decline. Maybe I my ears were...
No, not... It was all different. Yeah.
Okay. But... You know, just anecdotally, as somebody who's a native Washingtonian, okay, when I grew up, a bus was the carriage of the people. Bus ride, even when I began to serve on the RAC, there was a big divide in the demographics between buses, people who rode buses, and people who took metro rail. As D.C. at least has become gentrified, bus ridership has become gentrified, and people who you would not be seen on a bus, you know, are now riding the bus. And I think that has something to do with it. And that, I mean, Candace, you can probably speak to that phenomenon because of the 16th Street.
Well, I take the bus because it's usually easier, and then if you get caught in traffic or something, you have the option of getting off and walking. And so I think a lot more people are realizing that that's a better option than potentially being stuck inside the metro or something like that. The bus isn't always reliable, but a lot of times it's more reliable than the metro. And so that's the reason, for example, I choose to take the bus when I have to go to work or when I have to go somewhere. It's just easier.
I think people are looking for destination mm-hmm. and the best and most convenient way of getting there. And I can tell you there are Silver Line riders that are starting to say, you know what, the bus got me to West Falls Church faster. And mm-hmm. why should I travel five stations? So, you know, it is a big question. So how we're deploying bus, I think, is really from the district.
Bus ridership is increasing across the region.
Yeah.
I think part of it is the gentrification of downtown Washington, but it's happening all over. And it has some really strategic implications about allocation of capital resources, for instance, and manpower, about the delivery of additional bus service, larger buses, busways.
Right away and all of that.
It's important to understand it, and we don't fully understand it yet. Yeah. And I think part of it is the change in mix with the opening of the Silver Line and the way bus service is either a feeder or your main mode of transportation.
I really do think it's something that we're going to see more and more. We're a high-income community on one end of Silver Line, and everybody rode the bus. They didn't ride the train, and they were quite comfortable doing that. But more importantly, I think it really is how do we provide the mobility for me?
And
it can be either mode and whatever.
Right. And Lynn, you had some data. I don't remember which presentation, but I think you had some data. It may have been... I don't know which it was, but it really struck me that people don't want to change their habits. So people don't want to, you mentioned the blue line, yellow line transfer, even though that might be an option that works better for them in terms of time, mm-hmm. people want a one-seat ride, even if it takes longer.
Exactly.
They want to, you know.
It's
Right, and Carol, I just want to add really quickly that I think that we also have a changing workforce where many people are starting to work from home several days out of the week. I think GSA, for example, almost 100% of their workforce teleworks several days out of the week. So you're going to continue to see this. Absolutely.
Okay, well,
it just occurs to me that maybe, you know, the Council of Governments could perhaps play, I mean, this is sort of freelancing now, but the Council of Governments could really play a big role, because I think you need to look at real estate patterns, you need to look at the number of people who are now living and working in the district, which would then go back to shorter rides. They don't need to go out to Tyson's Corner because they're doing everything within a shorter period of time, which to me makes buses a better option. I see that the circulator is going to expand its service in D.C., which is going to possibly pull some more people onto buses in general. So
the other is that, and it's an issue that TPB has struggled with for some time, and that is that we have 11 other bus service providers in the region besides Metrobus, and that comparable period year-to-year ridership data is not well aggregated, let me put it that way. And we need to have a better picture of all of the mass transit in the region, not just Metro Rail and Metro Bus, but the other 11 bus service providers in the region. So it's a challenge, and maybe it's worth talking to TPB about the data collection.
Well, the conversation does play in the blue,
it does,
orange silver line piece, because this was predicated on the change, the options that were available. Our assumption is there was a capacity out there that's not being utilized, I think, to the level that it was expected. That could reflect very much on some of the points that we're making here. Change.
I think one of the other factors that I've heard you acknowledge before, too, I think is a big one, is the subsidy change in terms of if you're taking the train, you are more apt to have a more expensive commute than on the bus, and you rely a lot on, you know, it makes it a less attractive offer when it's not subsidized so much. I think that I look forward to seeing the data. I think some of the requests from the public are probably, they were hoping for some immediate response, not because we acknowledge that trends are important and seeing the big picture, but I think they also were looking for some validation of their experiences in the early days, that maybe in a long term you can't really see what was happening. And I'm glad to hear that the blue isn't suffering any different experience overall in terms of the ridership change, because I think the prediction was for some mass exodus of blue riders, and that the first time they had the 24-minute wait might be their last time. Yeah. But I'm glad to hear that they haven't abandoned ship.
That's it for our formal agenda, and I was just wondering if anybody else should do some sort of like open mic. I call it discussion because I'm old enough to hate it when I see MIC. That.
Yeah. I wonder what that is myself. My apologies for being late. I had a bad morning that only got worse.
Understand.
It wasn't Metro's fault.
That's good to hear. Anybody have anything? I would say one thing. I had to prepare for my chair's report later this afternoon, so I don't want to bore you by hearing the same information twice. But one of the things that I think we should bring up at this meeting is that I have to highlight for the chair's report later on, is the maturation of our committee system. We have really spent a lot of time this year trying to do a better job of governance. And, you know, I think the products that we mentioned, you know, the bylaws, the signage paper, the resolution, all came out of our committees. And following kind of the model that you use of do the work in the committee, bring it to the rack as a finished product. And so I think we are getting there. We're not completely there yet, but we're getting there as far as the maturation of the idea that people might have to, people whom you appoint might, must do more than just show up once a month for a meeting. So.
On coming to meetings, last year I enjoyed meeting the new RAC members at the
yes.
orientation. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of fun, and I'd be glad to do that again at the right time if you'll tell me when.
Okay.
And I'll be glad to show up. And
right. And what we're trying to do. Yes, and you came, and I wanted to say that Candace is our is going to put together, is in the process of putting together an orientation package. But one of the things that we're doing also is sort of taking a leaf. I'm one who doesn't believe in reinventing the wheel, so we're taking a leaf from the AAC committee. We're putting together a group of bios of the RAC members, because if you take 21 members who have 2 minutes each to tell about right. themselves, you used up a lot of time at the meeting, so we're doing that. And we hope to develop an orientation package. Will be both first online, I mean, not yet, stuff that you've self-directed, as well as a paper product. And so you will definitely be getting an invitation to do what you did before, because a lot of people feel that that was the most memorable part of an orientation. And you, and I personally remember your challenge of trying to put together some staff work that was meaningful and on the same level of quality as what previous people had done, like the airports working group report and the AAC lighting study. So that's kind of the model that we've tried to follow based on your challenge.
Well, the work has been well received by the board. So
thanks, very good. So I guess in October, I think in October, I may have the, we're going to start the cycle in order to get the other replacements, advertising for the RAC members, and so, yeah, through the December time.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Get your replacements ready for your orientation.
Or you start the year with a new full board.
Great. Great.
Any other business?
That's it for us.
Can we do the quorum? Okay. Mm-hmm. Loita reminds us we didn't have a quorum for the approval of the minutes. I would move the approval of the minutes of July 24th.
So again.
Motion made, seconded. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you. And that's it. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Well organized and thoughtful. Thank you again.
You.